Hi everyone, I'm Jason Scores, and welcome to another episode of Dispatch from the Zombie Apocalypse. I hope everybody is doing great, and that you had a great Thanksgiving, or are about to have a great Thanksgiving. And if you're not one to celebrate Thanksgiving, that you're just doing great either way. And so today's episode is an interview with Wallace Nichols. He goes by Jay, and he is the author of Blue Mind, and has been the catalyst this past decade or so for a real movement around Blue Mind. He's a really fascinating thinker, movement builder, and this is all about our connection to water in its various forms. And I think a perfect next episode after Bill McKibben's interview, in which we kind of tackled some pretty heavy big picture stuff. This is much more on the micro level about our individual connections. And it's also perfect for this holiday season because it's about giving thanks and building connection. So I really enjoyed this interview a lot, and I hope you do as well. So without further ado, my interview with Jay. Okay, so I am here with Jay Nichols, author of Blue Mind, and the catalyst for what's become called the Blue Mind Movement, and a kind of a constellation of ideas and concepts and things going on both kind of across sectors of society. So welcome, Jay. Thanks for inviting me in. Thanks for being on the podcast. So let's just start, for people who don't know what Blue Mind is about, tell us about how these ideas crystallized for you, and you know how you came to this concept of Blue Mind, and it's, at its kind of core, what is this?
Well, Blue Mind is just a simple and I think useful phrase to describe the way we feel when we're near, in, on, or underwater. For most people, that's a pretty good feeling. It might be a warm bath at the end of a long day. It might be a surf session or a paddle or your lap swimming routine or a shower or just stepping outside in the rain when you want to be in the rain or taking a break from work and sitting by the fountain that's outside of your office. Whatever it is, whatever your water is, that feeling that you like, that you get when you're near it, that's Blue Mind. And it's a simple phrase, but I think pretty useful to describe a fairly universal response to an emotional response to the water. And the reason I ended up writing this book about it is I wanted to read this book, but I went to get it out of the library and it wasn't there. It hadn't been written. And so I tried really hard to get other people to write it, and I failed at that. And the last pitch was to a neurologist named Oliver Sacks, Dr. Oliver Sacks, passed away last year. And he had written some great books that I've admire the man immensely. And he loves water. So he's a brain guy. He's a brain scientist who tries to swim every day of his life. And he had said that he got his best ideas among many very, very good, big, world-changing ideas. But he said he has best ideas while swimming. So I thought, that's the guy who needs to write this book. And so when I pitched the idea to him, he said, it's a fine idea, you do it.
Yeah, it's funny. So you're the reluctant pioneer.
Yeah, exactly. I was hoping to read Blue Mind by Dr. Oliver Sacks. So now you get to read Blue Mind by Jay Nichols.
Yeah, well, you're given the reception, I think that was a pretty good, you were a pretty good second choice there.
Yeah.
And it's funny you say that about the feeling of water, because in contact with water, I think the best physical moments of my day are that like first 10, 15 minutes out of a shower or getting out of the ocean, right? It's just like that cleanliness and that purity. And there's something about that kind of calm, that tranquility. And I didn't think about the notion of thinking. He got his ideas thinking while he was swimming. I always kind of joke, and again, it's not even I'm conscious of it, but I'll tell people, yeah, when you're in the shower and you're there with that, think about this thing I told you, and then we'll talk next week. But it's probably not a coincidence that I'm mentioning something that has to do with water.
It's intuitive. It's insightful. It's not a new idea by any means, but it really didn't have a name. It was this thing that we all either figured out or didn't figure out, that we learned through experience, but we were never taught. Nobody ever said in your health class or your science class or your ecology class, water is good for your mental health. Let's talk about that and let's study the science of that. Let's pull together the peer review research and let's spend half a day on that topic. I went to a lot of school, as you did, and as many of the people around us here have done. And nobody ever said anything like a healthy ocean is good for your brain, ever, in any of my classes. I'm like, wow, that's a big miss. It's a big miss on a lot of levels, on our personal wellness level, on our national healthcare level, but also on from a conservation and restoration perspective. Leaving that out is, I think, a dangerously naive, perhaps.
Certainly myopic.
Omission. Yeah. That has not helped a lot and probably hurt our efforts to protect and restore our wild waterways. So that's about as hard as I'm going to hit you in your kneecaps right now. And I blame the ecologists, the economists, and I studied both ecology and economics and educators for leaving it out.
Yeah, for this omission. It's interesting. I kind of often say in my classes when I present really classic works of economics and other kind of political science that sometimes genius is being able to articulate the obvious. Mm-hmm. So I do think there is a genius in this. Like you say, it's intuitive. Once you say it, everyone's like, of course, but no one has said it, right? Yeah. So like, you know, and the fact that you kind of crystallized it and really put it down and just made it something that people could latch on to and, you know, hold on and kind of bookmark. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think is really important.
Hashtag.
So, yeah. Hashtag. Oh no.
Hashtag
that's
mind.
where we are now. All right.
Forget bookmarks. I'm about to hashtag.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm clearly behind the times. I think I've used Twitter a few times anyway. So I want maybe jumping to the kind of the other end of the spectrum here. So you just introduced the concept, you talk about it in this kind of intuitive on a one-to-one on a personal level, which I think obviously we can all get. But now you're really trying to let Blue Mind kind of wade into industry and really thinking about how this can be integrated into practice and into work and into life in a much more systematic and systemic way. Obviously because of the benefits. Right. And so could you bring us, you know, there, and I know we're kind of flipping to the other end here, but where's that work going?
Well, the goal is not to create an academic body of work that sits on the shelf for a handful of academically minded people and students to think about. That really is, I have no interest in that. That's maybe one brick in the wall, as they say, but my goal is to have these ideas just become part of the operating manual for human beings. That's something we are taught by our parents, by our teachers in school, in graduate school, that just becomes part of our common knowledge, our handbook for living well on a water-based planet as water-based beings. So it sounds kind of far out and sci-fi, but the fact is we are made of water. We came from the water. We're going back to the water, and our entire economy depends entirely on the water. So let's talk about it for real. Let's talk about the emotional benefits of healthy water. And so that connects to basically everything. That's not a good strategy. So you kind of have to break it apart and say, where do we want to go with this? So I've kind of reduced the world to these nine sectors, and I won't run through all nine, but they include healthcare, includes education, includes conservation and environmentalism, but also includes real estate, and also includes water and food infrastructure. Because imagine for a second, if every realtor who was doing their job had read Blue Mind, and had a, you know, pocket full of blue marbles. And every time they spoke to a potential client, potential buyer, they mentioned a few things, a few factoids about why the view that maybe you have to lean out the window to see it of the lake, of the river, of the ocean was good for your health, your mental health. and boosted creativity, helped you relax, helped you sleep, made you and your friends and your family feel a little more close-knit. What if every real estate agent on the planet was talking that talk? That would be awesome. That would be an army of people promoting healthy water that we don't currently have. What if people who work in healthcare, doctors, nurses, hospice workers, pediatricians, people who work in mental health, what if they were all talking Blue Mind and saying, hey, I'm going to prescribe you some of this stuff, but here's another thing I'm going to write down. Do you swim? Do you paddle? Do you have a bathtub? I want you to do that a little more or learn. Take a surf class. Take a free diving class. Get in the pool. Make time for a bath. What if every health practitioner was just adding that in? That'd be easy. Really easy. Right? As easy as it was for me to just say it. For both real estate agents and health practitioners and all teachers. So if you're teaching a module on the ocean or on water, include the cool science, the neuropsychology. So that, you know, those are just a few sectors, but we're just trying to add a page, you know, a cheat sheet for different professions so they can just add a tool to their toolbox and do their job better. And so that's how I think we're turning this idea into something that more resembles a movement that has some virality to it, I guess you could say.
It's interesting because we had Bill McKibben on campus here a few weeks back. And one of the things that really came across to me, he was talking about, you know, to really change trajectories in society, you're changing zeitgeist, you're mm-hmm. changing fundamental ways of thinking. You're not working on any particular policy goals or outcomes. Yeah. And it seems like that's kind of what you're getting at, right? Yeah. Which is not, there's, you know, it's water is really fundamentally good for you. And this underlying appreciation should be built into yeah. your thinking across all these, yeah. these sectors.
And I think starting out with the good news, starting out with a few of the positive attributes of healthy water. So when I talk to people, I just ask them, what's your water? What's the water that you fell in love with that makes you happy? Turn to the person next to you. Take 2 minutes and chat about it. And then we'll come back and we'll get into it. And what that does is it primes the pump with oxytocin, which is a feel-good chemical that your body makes. What we typically do is we prime the pump with cortisol, which is a stress hormone that creates a fight or flight response. So if you're starting a conversation that you want people to stay on board with, to trust and to connect to, what do you want to use? Cortisol or oxytocin? It's your choice. Red Mind or Blue Mind? It's your choice. We typically choose Red Mind, and that ends up being divisive, and it gets people into fights, and it makes people want to run away. And now they're associating that feeling with your brand, whether it's environmentalism or a social movement or whatever it is. And that's hard to rewind and go back and undo and start over once you've gone down that road. So we've taken our time and paid attention to trying to be as inclusive and blue-minded as we can with our approach. You know, we give out a lot of blue marbles, which connects people. It's a gesture of gratitude rather than a poke in the eye or, you know, a shot in the kneecap. Which is, you know, a little bit more of the traditional green approach to these conversations. So kind of interesting. And, you know, it's a little neuropsychology meets social change, meets movement building, meets the water.
Yeah, no, that's great. And now that you've interjected the kind of the Red Mind, Blue Mind kind of dichotomy here, let's go there for a little while. Because, and again, in previous conversations, this notion, and we've talked about this, that in the kind of left-right, Democrat-Republican divide, there certainly seems to be on the kind of right much more anger and much more grievance and pain. And, you know, David Frum was a famous conservative. You know, he said, happy people don't vote for autocrats, right? Like, he's a conservative. He's traditionally been a Republican, voted for George Bush. But he sees this movement towards this authoritarianism is coming from pain yeah. and anger. And it seems like what you're talking about can kind of is really speaking that in a universal way. And I'm wondering if you want to kind of elaborate on that a little.
Yeah, so there's a long tradition of using anger and conflict and divisiveness and stress to control people, to manipulate and to create an agenda and then to drive that agenda. And whether, I'm not even talking about the U.S. I'm not even talking about right now. I'm just talking about the human political animal. This is not a new idea. And it's not just in the realm of politics. Marketers understand it quite well. They use our emotions to drive behaviors that aren't even good for us. So politicians figured that out and they use the same toolkit. We really need to also use that toolkit as a force for good, not to do it in a secretive or an underhanded way, but actually make it transparent. So that's kind of the approach we take is like, I want you to know everything I know about your brain, right? A neuromarketer or a neuropolitician wants you to not even know that they exist. So there's a big difference between what I call neuroconservation and neuromarketing or neuropolitics. But there's a red blue thing going on in our brains, and there's a time and a place to be freaking pissed and start breaking shit. It's not all the time. It's not something you want to do every day, but there's a time for red mind. What's happened, I think the American Psychological Association will back this up. We're in red mind more and more and closer to all the time these days as modern Americans. We're connected to all this technology. Our social media feeds us just a lot of crap, and whether you want to call it fake news or just angry news, we're carrying so much weight. And you over the course of an hour checking the news, you're gonna get all the bad news of the world in one shot. And then you got to figure out how am I going to process that and go on and take my kids to school? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a daily activity that is rather unique to the modern human. Add to that, just all the stimulation, all the screens that are around us all day long. Even when we, you go to TGIF, thank God it's Friday, out for a dinner at the end of your long week, and there's 15 screens sending you messages, whether it's a sporting event or news, and that's considered relaxation. Meanwhile, there's a soundtrack pumping in the background and an annoying waiter giving you way too much information. That's our version of chilling, relaxing. So what do? We get a little drunk, and that's how we get hungover. That's red mind. That's like a red mind life. If that sounds good to you, good luck. Things are going to fall apart if they haven't fallen apart already. If that sounds like a good idea for you, a way to run a country, things are going to fall apart if they haven't fallen apart already. And we're on some version of that path right now. Just divisiveness, red-mindedness, anger. It doesn't lead to creativity. It doesn't lead to problem solving. It doesn't lead to collaboration. It just leads to more mess, I think. So I'm not hanging the whole answer on the water. However, it's part of it, certainly. Sit in a hot tub and have a conversation and see if it's any different than yelling at each other on social media. I guarantee it's a different experience.
It's a great point. I think, again, obviously that not that the blue mind kind of concept is going to solve all these structural, issues that, like you said, are these are centuries, millennia old. There's nothing new, right? We're not seeing anything new here, maybe just new versions of it. But there is something comforting and I think inspiring about the fact that there are some simple changes in kind of this kind of bring ourselves away from the red mind that water can play a pretty big role in, that really does change the biochemistry of the mind and set us up for success. Yeah. What we do with it is still up to us, but at least it kind of creates the template and the kind of the baseline for productive, creative dialogue.
Yeah. And the examples that I've encountered in doing this work range from my own life, raising kids, you know, if we're having an argument, a bad day, the kids aren't getting along, and we just go to the beach and carry on the conversation, it's like magic. And my kids, they even say, "Dad, are you doing that blue mind thing on us?" And I'll say, "Yeah, of course."
It's a modern Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, exactly. Except I want them to understand and know exactly what I'm doing and then do it themselves. And now as they get older, before they get into a red mind mode, they say, "Dad, I'm going to the beach." They walk out the door and I won't see them for an hour. They come back and they're just way more chill. And that's a really, really helpful with a couple of teenage girls in the house. And then, you know, shout out to all the dads and moms raising teenagers. Just get in the water a little more, and, you know, even a shower. I mean, my kids, they know, reset button, get in the shower. You know, not too long, don't want to use too much water, but they value that. So that's just one practical example. But working with veterans and first responders who are dealing with post-traumatic stress in, you know, various degrees, again, not a magic bullet solution, but many of them find the best relief, better than any of the drugs they're prescribed, better than some of the other therapies that they're using, to be getting on the water, getting in the water, whether it's a float tank, a surfboard, a kayak and a fishing pole, open water swimming. It helps. And it helps the people who need it the most, the people who have, you know, served us, whether it's in war or in a fire or in an earthquake or in a hurricane. The people whose job it is to show up first and deal with the big mess, they need this the most. And it seems to be incredibly useful. And again, I don't want to ever sort of overstate, but it's pretty clear. And so when you talk about at-risk youth, you know, kids on the autism spectrum, kids who are just completely addicted to technology and aren't really even sure how to function without it, just get on the water, get in the water, teach them to surf, teach them to scuba dive, teach them to love their river, teach them to fly fish. There's a long list of possibilities. And they're not all super athletic. You don't need to be Kelly Slater. You can be Jay Nichols. And like, I have shitty balance, and you know, my jock days are in the rear view mirror. But I love it. It's fun. I mean, it's just thinking about it makes me smile, right? You know? And so that's the, you know, the people who need it most. Yeah. The blue mind is really helpful. And for the average Joe, the average Jason, the average Jay, it's really, really cool. It's really useful. You want to have it in your toolbox as a parent, as an educator, as a teacher, as a mentor, and just as a human being trying to make their way through yet another hard day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because an example from putting Blue Mind to work in my profession as an educator, you know, we typically, for the new incoming fall students, we always do these, you know, kind of usually at some kind of party with some alcohol involved and everything like that. And we, you know, given the state of the world and the country right now, we say, you know what, let's not do the regular thing. We brought in a really top guy from Environmental Defense Fund who leads these mindfulness meditation workshops. And we did it right on the beach, you know, overlooking the ocean, perfect day. And we just did all forms of meditation and, you know, had about 30 students come out. And it was, again, the first time in 15 years that we just kind of done something a little different. That was precisely to do something different and to be more mindful and had just great receptivity to that. And, you know, students can go drink beer any day, yeah, right?
And they already know that.
Right, and exactly, right. They're not learning anything new. And so it was a great example, I think, of taking Blue Mind into my own work. And it was very successful.
Well, a quick story. I gave a talk over at Stanford, drove up the coast and then cut over. And it was to a group of about 100 grad students involved in ocean related, but, you know, training themselves to be ocean leaders. And I started out my talk and I said, stand up if you're stressed. As a grad student here at Stanford, if you're stressed, everybody stood up. Okay, and sit down. And then I showed a video that I'd taken on my way to the talk of San Gregorio Beach, just a 30-second pan from the cliff of the whole beach. And I said, okay, watch this. Stand up if you recognize this spot. Where in the world is this? One guy stood up, surfer. I said, okay, sit down. This is the closest beach to where you're sitting right now. This is the beach you can get to first if you need to go see the ocean. So you're studying the ocean. You say you're stressed. You're living a red-minded life. And the number one source of stress reduction and creativity that I've encountered as a scientist and as an ocean guy is that beach. And this is the closest one. So like, here's the, I don't need to spend the rest of the hour even talking to you. This is my point.
Go to the beach.
Get there. Hitchhike, ride your bike, carpool, whatever you need to do. It will reduce your stress. It'll boost your performance. You might actually have a really good conversation with one of your classmates and, connect the dots here. Go talk to some of the best neurophysiologists in the world who are on your campus. Go talk to them about stress. If you think that there's something touchy-feely, woo-woo, Santa Cruz-y, whatever you want to call it, about what I'm saying here, go talk to one of these scientists who are within 5 minutes of where you're sitting and ask them about the science of stress. Stress kills. That's the short version. And so you need to manage it starting now and use all the tools available, starting with the ocean.
Nice.
Nice.
So kind of maybe kind of going a little from there to some of the maybe kind of counterintuitive or unexpected places Blue Mind is taking you. So a lot of what you've said so far is, again, it's articulating something we know deep down, but making it really concrete and making it front and center. But has Blue Mind taken you in some places that you really were surprising to you?
Yeah. Well, two things kind of popped out there. I was invited to give a talk and lead a workshop at a wastewater treatment conference for the entire state of Alberta, Canada, in Banff. And I found myself in the room with hundreds, like 300-400 older, middle-aged plus white guys, engineers, all engineers, career water managers. And not just the water that you're happy to have come out of your tap, the water you're happy to have leave your home because there's poo and pee in it. The water you'd never want to see again, never want to know about. So this is a group of engineers who basically, manage poo and pee for a living. And they never get a call saying, hey, thanks, you're doing a great job. Never. Oh, they only get calls when something's
wrong.
Not good.
It's backed up.
Yeah. So engineers, water managers. And I'm there to talk about Blue Mind. It's a tough audience, you might say. Just imagine that, right? Not a touchy-feely crew. And I started out and I said, what do you do with your time and your family when you get a break? All of them go to the water. All of them. Rivers, lakes, mountains, ice, snow, water. That is their life. They work with water. They play with water. They relax with water. They raise their family on water. So that was just the starting point. Then we got into it and half the room was crying by the end of my talk. And they said, I'm third generation in this career. My father and his father were water managers and never thought about it. This is my job. My job is to make sure people's relationship with water is solid. If I do my job wrong, bad things happen to the river I love, where I take my kids fishing, and to the people who depend on me getting it right. So that was one part. But the surprising part was their biggest concern is they need to recruit and hire the next generation of people to do what they do. And that's not easy in this world where everybody's, got an idea. Everybody's starting a .com or whatever it is. It's shorter attention spans. People want to get to the top faster than ever. American Idol mentality, right? Across the board. They're having a hard time offering the job to people that they want to hire and having them say, yes, I'm taking it. The best and brightest young engineers just out of grad school. And so what we did is we spent time really discussing, what is this job? What does it really mean to do this job well? What are the real benefits of this line of work for society? Hadn't thought of it. The emotional benefits. Yeah, the economic benefits, the ecological benefits, but the emotional benefits of managing water well are enormous. You know, bath time, healthy river, lakes that are getting cleaner, not worse off over the course of your career. That's your selling point to this next generation of young people that you want to hire, because they're going to ask you the question about purpose and passion. And maybe you've never even thought of that clearly, because that's what they told me. I never thought of that. I just do my job. I'm happy to have a job and I do it well. So that was a completely, I'm a marine biologist who studied sea turtles. I never expected I'd be in Banff hanging out with wastewater treatment folks. A very similar story, and I won't go into it in as much detail, but at a hospice conference. So men and women, doctors and nurses who help people die with their last days, weeks, or months. Work with families, work with their patients. High stress job. They're saints and angels and whatever words I can use to describe that group of professionals. And I brought the water conversation four times, so four different hospice conferences. Again, we never thought of that. We need to ask our patients about their water. Do they want to see it again? Do they want to taste it again? Do they want to go there? Even if it's in the form of bringing a photograph or a video into the bedside, maybe get in a van, take the whole bed out of the hospital and go to the beach one more time, whatever it takes. So for their patients, but for themselves, high stress, high burnout. If you don't focus on self-care first and foremost, that's the warrior code. Take care of yourself first. Otherwise, you're not a warrior. You're no use if you can't function. So as a caregiver, end of life caregiver, take care of yourself. They forget to do that. Water is a good way to take care of yourself. And then the third part is take care of the families of your patient, the person who's dying or just died. They're surrounded by people who love them that need to know that the water is a really, really good place to grieve, to mourn, to scream. Go underwater and scream your ass off and just, you know, get in the water with the people you love who are still alive and cry about it. Surf and cry. And a lot of people who do paddle outs and just, you know, memorial paddle outs, cry. Go out in the ocean, cry. It's a great place to cry. It's a great place. We scatter ashes. We do memorials by the water. And if you were going to do a paddle out and the ocean had an oil spill, you wouldn't be able to do it. When you go to do a memorial at the beach and there's plastic everywhere, it's not a very nice day. It doesn't honor the lost loved one. So there's the kind of the hook, is take care of the ocean so that it can be all of those things. Take care of the rivers and the lakes so that they can be the place you go with your kids, the place you go to chill out, and the place you go when you have to mourn the loss of a loved one. And so that's all pretty heavy stuff. And I was not expecting that, you know, in my wildest dreams of my career as a marine biologist, that I would be standing in front of a group of people at a hospice conference or a wastewater conference, offering anything that they could possibly find useful. Pretty surprising and extremely gratifying to be able to be of use in that way. Way outside of my, not only my comfort zone, but my field of expertise, you could say. But that's where this conversation is headed. It is a reminder that, yeah, water is necessary for life itself. It's necessary to run our economy, but it also is what makes life worth living. And if we don't talk about that, we will lose that part. We'll still have water, I guarantee it. Water's not going away. It might get expensive. You might have to really cut back, but we're not going to run out of water ever. We're going to run out of nice places to go and cry your ass off and remember grandpa. You're going to run out of places, clean waves and wild, healthy rivers. We're not going to run out of water. And so that's worth fighting for. Those things that give us all the mental health benefits, all the emotional benefits. But we have left that out of the conversation almost entirely. And I one of my hobbies is finding the new brand new 2017 report on what the ocean is worth or what the lakes and rivers are worth and looking for it. I have a long list of keywords that I look for. They're almost never there. They're just not even in the last little final mention.
Not in the footnote.
In the footnote. They're just left out. And that's what kind of fires me up is like, you know.
Get that front and center.
And just saying point blank, do not. And that's my message right now. Whoever's listening to this, do not. From this point on, do not. Don't you dare write a report and leave out the emotional benefits of nature ever again. Do not do it. You're doing damage by doing that when you leave it out. It is wrong. It is factually incorrect. It is short-sighted. It's warped. And it's dangerous. Hmm. That's about as hard a point I could possibly put
on
it.
That's great. I'm going to have to go check what I'm working on, make sure I get that section in there. Yeah.
And if your concern is that the science isn't in, I'm here to say it is. Go look up Dr. Matthew White at the University of Exeter Medical School and the Blue Health Program. EU-funded, interdisciplinary, awesome work. Cite his work. If you don't think it's quantifiable enough, use words because it's real. So if you're leaving it out, you're either saying it's not real, it's not important, or you don't know about it. And as of right now, listening to Jason's podcast, you don't have any of those excuses. Yeah,
that's great. So you touched on a lot in there. A couple of things that stand out to me is I always kind of joke with the students that, you know, fame and doing something that actually matters are usually inversely correlated, mm-hmm. right? So like the things that are the most important, like infrastructure, institutions, wastewater management, right? Like those are the things you don't get on the cover of magazines yeah. for and aren't really good cocktail conversation. Well, that's why I really love how you, and it's actually harming this profession, right? Because people want that. They want to be in these kind of sexy, creative endeavors with kind of purpose. Mm-hmm. But how you can say, all right, but you can actually frame it that way.
Yeah.
And that these things that are fundamental and kind of structural, kind of baseline, are really serving this noble purpose. Mm-hmm. And that, and you can really reframe it. I think that's really powerful. And then how you ended that last segment really goes into where I wanted to go with this, which is the kind of conservation policy outcomes of a blue mind, right? And you really made that pretty strong. That water isn't going anywhere, but it's high quality water. It's mm-hmm. clean water. It's clean, healthy ecosystems. Mm-hmm. It's not just physical water. Yeah. That's necessary. So it's more than just water. It's water within a healthy system.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's a lot that we can do to improve the way our laws or regulations or policies are composed. There's some language that's not in them that needs to be included. If somebody wrecks your river, yes, there's an ecological cost, there's an economic cost, and there's a massive emotional cost that is rarely discussed, almost never measured. It's not codified, and it should be. Because, by the way, that river may have been the lifeline for the firefighters who serve you. That river could be the thing that keeps them sane. And I just go look who's out there and ask them their story. They will tell you this river keeps me going. This keeps me alive. I wouldn't be able to manage this high stress world without this river. Don't take that river away. Don't pollute that river. The Gulf oil spill, all the people who went to the beach, who went fishing, who recreated on the water, it's just to get through a hard day, hard week, just to hold it together. That was their medicine. That oil spill took all of that away. We never talked about it. We never measured it. It wasn't on the news. It wasn't in the reports. It was a huge loss. Not to mention all the stress that we all felt just from a distance. You know, we didn't measure that. We didn't really add that up and charge BP for that cost. But we know as physiologists that stress causes disease. It exacerbates illness. It makes us less creative and less well in general. So all that red mind was just sort of absorbed by society. I mean, I joke about it here on the Monterey Bay in Santa Cruz. All the people who go to the ocean on a weekly basis just to chill, whether they're surfing or swimming or fishing or paddling or just walking and looking at it, it sucks the stress out of their lives. Ask their family members. They come back. Like you said, you know, that time after the water, surfing or showering or bathing, it's a nice time of day. You get a little more done in a slightly different way. You might be a little more productive or a little bit more kind or insightful. That email, that phone call is just a little better. So that's a benefit. Add all that up and, you know, it's tons of benefit. I don't know how you quantify it. Okay, now take all that away and just replace it with the stress. Whoa, you don't really want to live in that town, right? That's what happens when we wreck the ocean, when we wreck the lakes and the rivers. And so we need to describe that a lot better than we are describing it formally. Like the people running the show, the highly educated, responsible adults in the institutions, in the agencies, in the nonprofits, in the state house, need to do a better job describing what's really at stake. And it isn't just economics, which is very important. It isn't just ecology, which is very important. And isn't just the educational benefits. It's also the emotional benefits. So it's getting the right language, including it. And that's the job of the next generation to say, okay, yeah, I learned this stuff. I took a neuroscience, a psychology class, and I studied economics. And I'm gonna change at the state level the way this law is written. We need to add a clause. We need to add some language in here that says wild, healthy water has mental health benefits. And that's, you just read, open the newspaper or look online, and mental health is in the news all the time. And it's usually not good news. It's almost always definitely bad not. News. Super bad. The worst news. Whether we're talking about mass shootings, we're talking about the opioid addiction crisis, whether we're talking about depression and anxiety in young adults because of social media. And right down the list, it's, whether we're talking about the mental health of our elected leadership, it's in the news. And
something tells me Trump does not spend a lot of time near water.
You know, I've asked, I'd love to get his youngest son out on a whale watching trip. Like, that's kind of where my mind goes. I don't really want
to. I might be able to make that connection because so one of my friends in New York works at the school where he just left to go to D.C.
Right.
So I actually was one of his teachers.
Right.
So yeah. I can maybe make that connection for you.
Let's do it. I mean, Monterey Bay, Melania and Barron Trump on a good day with orcas and humpbacks and you and Steve Plumbee, or I don't know, I want to throw anybody's name in the mix. But there's Melania Trump made a great statement at Children's National Hospital in D.C. connecting the health of kids and the health of nature. Right? Her words, it wasn't an accident. She said it in another venue as well. It's real, and she knows it. We know it. We're talking about it. We all know it. And so let's follow that up. And make it I guess our goal here is let's make it a lot harder to do bad things. Let's just make it a lot harder. And we're not going to stop it. Let's just make it harder. Whether it's, slaughtering endangered species or despoiling our waterways or whatever, right down the list of let's just make it harder to do bad things. How's that? That's not political. Are we all in agreement? Can we just make it harder to do really super duper evil, shitty stuff? Yeah.
Sign me up for that. And I rarely on this podcast do I say anything positive about anyone in the Trump orbit. I think you might be the first. So I appreciate that. You get extra points for that. And we'll follow up on the whole Trump family out of Monterey Bay. That would be awesome. Just to kind of end it here, because I think you've given a really amazing overview with a lot of examples really for us to take. But just to the listeners here, are there specific things you want to kind of indicate to them, conferences, websites, things for people who hear your message, it resonates, and want to take the next step in the Blue Mind journey?
Yeah, I guess first and foremost, I'm really not selling anything or promoting anything other than I just want to encourage your relationship with water, whatever it is. It's up to everyone. It's a very personal thing. Figure it out. But I've never met anybody who said, yeah, I just don't need any more water, ocean, lake, river time. I've got enough. Never. We all could use a little more or a lot more. And I put myself in that category. It's easy to skip it. It's easy, even, you know, with my kids, and there's never enough, never too much. So post-it note, whatever you need, get in the water a little more surf time, a little more long bath time, a little family trip, a weekend, whatever it is, just put it on the calendar. You do it well. You're a good traveler to exotic, waterful, wildlife, Blue Mind locations, and you're a good example of how to do that. So it's just a nudge there. And if you're interested in the book, it's easy to find. If you look up the phrase Blue Mind, you'll find we do workshops. We have an event, a week-long workshop here in Monterey coming up in January. We'll probably continue to do that. There's lots of ways to get involved. So I'll throw the door open and say, if you have ideas or you want to continue this conversation, just search for Blue Mind, and you'll find us, and we're into it. So tell us how you want to work together, and we'll do it. Yeah.
And it's amazing. On that note, that I think you have found the only thing that probably every single human being likes and wants more of, and is actually good for them to want more of. I mean, I don't know if there's anything else. So you've definitely found that you can't get a wider audience than that. So on that note, thanks for elaborating on kind of how this can help us. And I think you're really on to something. It's been great to work with you these last couple of years, and look forward to seeing where this goes. So thanks for being on the podcast. Oh,
yeah, really fun. Yeah, thanks a lot. Keep it up.
Okay, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jay as much as I did. A lot of deep stuff in there, a lot of stuff to ponder, and really perfect for this holiday season of Thanksgiving. And giving thanks is probably something we could all do more of. And so my antidotes for today are going to be quite short and simple, which is to just get more Blue Mind and bring your family and friends and colleagues into Blue Mind. Again, it can be something as simple as just sitting near a fountain outside of work or watching the sunset. But I think we could all benefit in these trying times from more Blue Mind, and especially the connection that it brings will lead us to take better care of these resources once we really understand how deeply entwined and integrated they are into our well-being. So if you just Google Wallace Nichols and Blue Mind, you can get more info about Jay's work, including his book, the workshop that's coming up in Monterey in January. And I also recommend watching the Netflix documentary that he did, which he's featured prominently in. And it tells the story of war veterans who Blue Mind really becomes a major force for their healing, and in some situations might even been responsible for saving their life when they were really down and out and thinking of taking their lives. So this is good stuff. It's deep stuff. We are mostly water, and our connections with water are really keys to our well-being and our continued prosperity on this planet. So with that, if you enjoy this podcast, please spread it with family, friends, and colleagues. Subscribe to it on Apple, iTunes, and Stitcher, and review it as well. That'd be much appreciated. So with that, everybody, I hope you have a great continuation of the holiday season and that you are healthy and well. Take care.